This is an MP3 audio clip from the weekly People First radio broadcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
At a recent conference in Toronto called Psych Out, a conference for organizing resistance against psychiatry, Dr. Bonnie Burstow presented an attrition model for anti-psychiatry in which she hoped to articulate guidelines which anti-psychiatry activists can use to stay on course and make difficult choices in their activism. Bonnie Burstow has been active in the anti-psychiatry movement since the early 1980s. She's a senior lecturer at University of Toronto, and she joins us today. Welcome to People First Radio, Bonnie.
Thank you.
Bonnie, you've said that the anti-psychiatry movement experienced rapid successes in its early days, but that today the movement needs a model. It really needs to know what it's doing. Tell us more about that.
Well, in the early days, it worked because it was new, and I think everything works when it's new. That people gravitate toward it, and will look at we'll get excited by the ideas it has. What happens after? But there's two things. One is anything out to abolish something as powerful as psychiatry is not simply going to have the state say, yes, we're going to abolish psychiatry. It can't work that way. So that's one thing that's one reality, that one's up against. But the other thing is that as anti-psychiatry or anything out to get rid of something ensconced by the state starts having successes, the system pushes back. And the system very definitely pushed back when it came to anti-psychiatry. People started spending money on campaigns to show that the various treatments were safe and effective when they weren't, etc. Now that that came about, anti-psychiatry had to get a whole lot smarter in how it proceeded. And so that's when I started looking at the problem that we didn't have a model.
What then is the basis of an attrition model for anti-psychiatry?
The basis of an attrition model begins with two assumptions. One is that the psychiatry as an entrenched institution is not going to disappear overnight. So that's an assumption. And the other assumption is that you can't act as if it's going to disappear overnight. So you need to find a way of wearing away at it. And essentially, the model looks at how do you make judgments about what actions to do so as to help, so as to further the wearing away of or eroding of psychiatry, which is then very different than asking that things be abolished straight out and so on, which doesn't tend to happen. But if you can look at what's going to be attrition-like and cause practices and eventually psychiatry itself to wither away, if you have a model, then that can move you in the direction that you want. And so in coming up with a model of an attrition model, I got the idea from prison abolition, which has had an attrition model for decades now, and it has allowed people to know when are they on track. So what it assumes is there may be all sorts of good things you can do, but good things don't necessarily lead to the atrophying of the institution you want to see atrophy. How do you make judgments, and how do you act as an activist, as a community organizer in such a way that it actually brings you closer to your goal?
You outline three definitional questions that anti-psychiatry activists should consider.
Yes.
What are those questions?
The questions are, and the first one is the kingpin, If successful, will the actions or campaigns that we are contemplating move us closer to the long-range goal of psychiatry abolition? And the next two, if that's the kingpin, are kind of auxiliary questions which come from the first, but aren't always as obvious. So the second one is, are they likely to avoid improving or giving added legitimacy to the current system? And the third is, do they avoid widening psychiatry's net?
Now, these questions are, as you, I think, were speaking in this direction a bit earlier, are accompanied by a warning that often things that seem like progress are not progress.
That's correct.
Can you give me an example of something like that?
Sure. Let's say that, I'll give you the example that is most obvious to me, because it's something that so many activists jump on the bandwagon of. Let's say there's a campaign to get rid of some obnoxious diagnosis. And that's not hard, and there's all sorts of diagnoses that are major, major problems. And throughout the history of the Diagnostic and Statistic Manual, feminists have got on the bandwagon, including me, to get rid of histrionic personality disorder because it was oppressive to women. Trans groups have gotten the bandwagon to get rid of various diagnoses oppressive to trans folk. Gays and lesbians got on the bandwagon to get rid of homosexual dystonic, ego dystonic, homosexual dystonic disorder. The problem with those is they lend psychiatry credibility. So they don't avoid improving the system. They improve the system in a very minimal way because they still oppress those groups in question. So they improve in a very minimal way while making psychiatry look progressive. Therefore, they go exactly in the opposite direction of helping psychiatry atrophy.
You're listening to People First Radio. I'm Kevin. The anti-psychiatry movement is not only at odds with the state and prevailing hegemony, it has also lacked a coherent vision about how to move closer to the goal which it espouses. Dr. Bonnie Burstow, an anti-psychiatry activist and senior lecturer at University of Toronto, recently presented an attrition model for anti-psychiatry, and she joins us on the phone today. Bonnie, at the start of your keynote address at the Psych Out conference about an attrition model for antipsychiatry, you shared the C.S. Lewis quote, of all tyrannies, a tyranny sincerely exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive. Those who torment us for our own good will torment us without end, for they do so with the approval of their own conscience. Tell us more about that dynamic.
This is where things get really complicated in terms of psychiatry. Whenever a group is said to be helping you, it is very, very hard to stop the harm, and they can harm you way more than any other group. So it's not just that they do so and they hurt you with their own conscience, but they hurt you with the blessing of the entire, community, because this is called help. Have anything labeled as help, and there's really very, very little limits to the harm that it can do. And that's precisely the problem with psychiatry. No other field could take something like an electrical current that can cause your mind a grand mal seizure and instill brain damage and give it to you. If it was called punishment, there would be an uproar, and everyone would say, we can't tolerate that. Because it's called treatment, it's paid for by OHIP.
As you mentioned earlier, you draw on principles gleaned from prison abolition in the presentation of this attrition model. Can you elaborate on the similarities between prison abolition and the current model that you're discussing?
The model is a very, very similar model. In prison abolition, their attrition model asked quite simply, will it bring us closer to our goal of prison abolition? And they, too, found themselves not supporting programs that on the face of it looked good, but in fact would not lead in that direction. So an example, and I remember it well because I was on the Quaker Committee on Jails and Justice at a time when we were looking at what to do, and that's a prison abolition group, the Quaker Committee on Jails and Justice. I remember bringing up naively at the time whether or not the Quaker Committee would get involved in literacy programs for people in prisons. And they looked at me and they said, well, you know, literacy programs would make, you know, are very good things to do because people don't have proper literacy skills, but this would improve the current system. It would not in any way lead to prison abolition, but in fact would make the system bigger. So it was that mode of thinking that I have tried to bring in to anti-psychiatry. And really, it makes sense looking to prison abolition because the situation are very similar between psychiatry and prison. Both are institutional situations where people are locked up and deprived of freedom, and in both cases, it's done under the auspices of the state and with the support of the state.
In your opinion, Bonnie, is there any future role for psychiatry to play? And if there is, what would that role look like?
You know, if psychiatry weren't psychiatry, I could imagine something. But right now, it would be hard for me to imagine. If you do not accept the premise that the problems in living that people are having, you know, when they get scared, when they get frightened, when they get, you know, in any of the states we get, if you do not accept the premise that those are illnesses, there is no role for psychiatry. These are doctors. There's a great deal of role for other people in the helping professions, but there is not a role for the medical profession.
We have just a couple of moments left. I'm wondering, is there anything else you'd like to add to our conversation today that I perhaps haven't asked you about?
Well, just one thing. One of the things that I think one of the many things I feel good about the attrition model is it also allows various aspects of the community of people who resist psychiatry, who battle against psychiatry to come together. For a long time, there has been a fair amount of tension between the anti-psychiatry movement and the MAD movement, for example, and there are many places the attrition model allows anti-psychiatrists to support the MAD movement, and I think that's one of the things that many of us have been looking for, points of meeting, and I think the attrition model provides points of meeting.
How can people find out more about your proposed attrition model for anti-psychiatry? Is there information
well,
online?
Eventually, there will be proceedings of the conference mounted, at which point people will have access to that speech, which at the moment is the only place that will, you know, the co-chair of the conference and I, as chair of the conference, will be eventually mounting proceedings of the conference. We're also hoping at some point to bring out a book, and in that book it would also be spelled out. But these are, you know, this is the first place that this model was publicly articulated was at the conference. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Bonnie Burstow, thanks very much for taking the time to join us today.
My pleasure.
It was much appreciated. Bonnie Burstow has been active in the anti-psychiatry movement since the early 1980s. She's chair of the Coalition Against Psychiatric Assault and a University of Toronto faculty member who teaches from an anti-psychiatry perspective. Bonnie Burstow presented her attrition model for anti-psychiatry at the Psych Out Conference in Toronto on May the 8th, 2010.
People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society's CHLY 101.7 FM, CHLY.ca, community radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of these organizations.